All right, I got Kamini Wood on the show. She's a human potential coach. She's a best-selling author and the creator of Authentic Me and the CEO of Live Joy Your Way. Kamini, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joel. It's great to be with you.
I'm excited to get into things with you. You have way more certifications than I could ever imagine. You have 5 kids. I only have 2. And you wrote a best-selling book. You have all of the, I don't know how you find the time to do all these things. And your background is just so rich in parenting, conscious leadership, human potential. So we could go anywhere in this conversation, but one of my big focuses right now is fatherhood and marriage. And my background, you know, being a former police officer and 10 years out of my 11 years of marriage were a complete wreck. And it was because I was, guess what, Kamini? I was not conscious in many ways. And so I brought a lot of this into my parenting and my boys. And the more I started to do some of this, again, maybe new age or conscious parenting, whatever people want to call it, my life got better. Now, I can't say it's fixed everything, but it has gotten better. Talk to me about conscious parenting. And I know you speak a lot about this. Matter of fact, you wrote a book. So talk to me about conscious parenting and like, why did you go down this route?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I went down the route kind of similar to what you were describing. So yes, mom of 5, but what I realized probably number 3 was in that preteen stage that she was emulating a lot of my people-pleasing perfectionist tendencies. And it was really actually holding her back from a social perspective. Like the anxiety was kind of through the roof. And I realized that that was, I mean, I say that kids are the mirror. They are our mirror. They show us how we're showing up. And so that was my moment let's take a look at how you're showing up, Kamini. And so that's when I went down the rabbit hole of this conscious parenting, because really when we're talking about conscious parenting, we're saying we need to become more conscious of who we are, how we're showing up, what our narratives, what our stories are that we're living into, and how is that affecting how we're showing up as parents. And so one of the things I get teased about by child number 1, who's now 22, is that child number 5 gets parented completely different. She gets away with a lot more than what child number 1 got away with. And the truth is, she's right, in the sense that I was probably so much more, or not even probably, I know I was so much more strict and on top of child number 1, because I was projecting a lot of my own fears and a lot of my own stories around perfectionism and people pleasing and all of that, versus now with child number 5, I'm able to step back and recognize when I might be in an activated state and how I can regulate myself before interacting with my child, which allows for a wholly different way of raising children.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you think that is one of the biggest things, again, when we talk about this conscious leadership or even conscious parenting? And we're going to get into it, by the way, because I think we are at a crisis when it comes to leadership in the nation and consciousness. And so I think you and I are going to talk about also, I think there's a lot of play between conscious parenting and conscious leadership. It's actually the same.
Absolutely.
And I really think too, Kamini, if you can't lead your home, if you can't be the leader in your home, how do you expect to go out and lead the masses? I just don't see it.
Absolutely. There is so much similarity between how we're showing up as parents, because essentially we are leading these little individuals who are trying to figure out who they are and find their own agency and autonomy. And we're doing that in the world when we're leading other teams, right? When we're leading team members, we are trying to create a space where they can create their own agency and autonomy to show up and contribute to the team. So it's very similar, and they run hand in hand.
Yeah. And you mentioned there's something about nervous system. Like, you know, I got to make sure that I show up and I come the best so that I don't overreact or I don't go down my maybe old patterns or beliefs. Would you say that's a big part of conscious parenting and even leadership? It's just, hey, making sure I'm okay so that I don't show up in a certain other way that I don't want to show up.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I'm talking about that nervous system, it is recognizing when we are emotionally charged. There is not going to be a great conversation to be had when we are in an emotionally charged space. And oftentimes that leads us to say things that we don't mean and don't actually want to say. But what we have to take into account as parents and as leaders is the person on the receiving end, while they might be able to forgive the things that we say, they cannot unhear them. And that's why I'm really, really particular when I'm talking to people about recognizing when you're in an emotionally charged space and giving yourself time to re-regulate before engaging in that conversation.
Yeah. Do you see, on that note of just parenting and leadership, do you see like one trait or something that like people do all the time, they do it in their parenting life, And then they also are now bringing that into their CEO or executive lifestyle. Maybe they don't even recognize it. And then you point out through your coaching, like, hey, I don't know if you noticed this, but like you do the same thing in your parenting and it's also showing up at work.
That is such a great question. And I don't want to say that it's everybody, but one thing that I have seen time and time again is the projection. So in parenting, especially, there is a fear of being a bad mom or a bad dad, right? Because there's that belief, if my kids don't do X, Y, or Z, then that means I'm a bad parent. And so that fear runs the show in terms of how we're communicating to our kids. And oftentimes that's when we will over respond or we'll say, what is wrong with you? Why did you do that? And in that very moment, in that communication, we are communicating to our child that they are bad and wrong. And we do that in leadership as well. When we don't want to be seen as an ineffective leader, that fear runs the show. And so the way that we communicate comes from a place of fear versus recognizing and owning what we're afraid of, working through that from a conscious perspective, recognizing that's that whole, I'm becoming the conscious parent, becoming a conscious leader, deal with my stuff first. So that then when I'm in communication with somebody, I'm no longer projecting my fears onto that person and I can communicate with them in a much more effective way.
Yeah, that's a big one. That makes total sense. And that's something I think a lot of people will be blind to. You don't even recognize it because some of those really internal, deep seated beliefs, fear and anxiety and anger, like you don't even know. Most of us, unless you've done some deep work, you don't even know that that's playing a role. You can't even see it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about just a conscious parenting, ethos or ethics maybe. And that is, I remember reading Dr. Shefali, I think Tasbury, mm-hmm. I'm not sure how to mm-hmm. say her name, but The Awakened Family, I believe is the book, is what it's called. And she said something and it always really resonates in my brain. It like burns in my brain, but I still struggle with it. I'm like, I don't know if that's true. And she says something about to the effect that, the awakened family or the awakened parent understands that the child and the parent are equals. Mm. What do you think about that? Like, and if you agree, like, how do you see it? That's something we talk about control. And right. I know, I think, I have a background as a police officer. Like if I didn't control things, my life was on danger. Right. So yeah. I have this background from always wanting to control things. And then, guess what? My parents did the same thing to me. They controlled me. So I have mm-hmm. this phenotype that says this control is a good thing. And mm-hmm. now trying to raise boys, two crazy boys, I feel like I don't have any control. And should I just accept that?
I'm a control freak myself. I would love to say I have control. I get nervous when I don't have control, but the truth is we don't control all the things. It's paying attention to what we do control versus what we don't. We can't control other people. And to Dr. Shefali's point, what I take out of that and what I have gleaned from her work. So I definitely have done a lot of, you mentioned it, a lot of trainings, and then I've often gleaned that and kind of created my own way of looking at things and bringing them into the work that I do. When I hear the comment that they're equals to us, the way that I interpret that is it's recognizing that, first of all, our children don't belong to us. They're not a possession. They are a human just like we are. And so they are equal in the sense that they are a human being wanting to create their own agency and autonomy. They are not necessarily at the same level of the quote unquote game, right? So we're at different levels of the game. Like we might be at a level 15 and they're still at level 5. But really what we need to recognize is that they're not a possession that we own, that we then get to do things with and we manipulate. Instead, if we can recognize that we are creating space for this human to develop into their own person with their own autonomy, then we are coming from a different place than we are trying to, we own them and we need to create and make them live a certain way or have them, their life unfold a certain way. That's what I think she's referring to in that statement.
I love that. Okay. That's great. Cause yeah, I was just thinking, a lot of us deal with, disrespect or discipline and mm-hmm. we're trying to regulate that. And then in those moments I'm thinking you're not equal to me, go to your room or something. But on that note right. of just anybody that's showing up and listening, cause we're going to talk about some conscious leadership principles too, but anybody that's showing up and they want to be a more conscious parent, what is the best way you think when you are faced with, let's just call it bad behavior. When you're faced with this bad behavior, what's the best way to approach that from a conscious parenting kind of perspective? Because I think a lot of the guys that I coach and work with, they have a really hard time saying like, Oh, I mean, I can't spank them, Joel. And you want me to talk to them? Like, he's yelling at me. He's disrespecting me. He's saying, no, I'm not going to do that. And you want me to just do nothing? Cause that's conscious parenting. Like, how would you approach this from a discipline standpoint?
And it's so hard, right? But really what we're saying when we're in that moment of like, what do you mean? You don't mean I can't spank them or I can't yell back at them. What we're really pushing our clients to recognize is that that would be an emotionally charged reaction. So what I say in that is take that time out, allow yourself to regulate and allow them some space to regulate too. And then we come back to the conversation. And that's what the conversation itself is, talking to your child about what it is that they're experiencing, what it is that they're feeling, what it is that they need. Because when we get to that, that's what conscious parenting is about. Because if we only parent the behavior, we're not understanding where that behavior is coming from. There's clearly an experience or an emotion or a feeling that they're not able to necessarily vocalize, and it's coming out in a behavior. So if we only parent the behavior, we're only taking care of something on a surface level. We're not dealing with what's actually happening for our child.
Yeah, or even like you've mentioned many times already in the first 10 minutes of this podcast is coming back to us, like yes. Checking in on us, like what are we bringing to the table? And I don't think anybody wants to ever see that. It's like, no, this is not my fault. We're not going down that route.
I mean, I will totally own it. My 10-year-old did not want to do her laundry this past weekend, and she was having a total fit. I had asked her to put away her laundry, and I just sat there. She's got a chair in her room, and I just sat there and waited. And, you know, she just kept screaming about how this is so unfair and she doesn't want to do her laundry. And I continued to sit and wait. And, you know, sure, there were moments where I felt myself bubbling up and I would just kind of breathe and wait and continue to just let her have her moments of anger. And then eventually she calmed down and she said, I just don't like doing my laundry. And we ended up having a conversation about it. And at the end of the day, she's like, fine, it'll take me 10 minutes. I'll go do my laundry. It wasn't magic. What it was just recognizing that if I responded in kind or responded from my emotional state of frustration, of, oh my gosh, I've just asked you to put your laundry away. Why are you not doing that? We would have been two ships passing and she would not have been able to vocalize what was really happening for her. And what was happening for her was she's 10 and she had other things that she wanted to do. And she was not sure that she was going to have time to do those things. And we just had to work through that and let her see that this really is just 10 minutes and she's going to get to all those other things that she wanted to do with her Sunday.
You mentioned focusing on their needs. And I think that's been a big one for me and it really helped transform my marriage and family was not just thinking about my needs and what I want to do in the world and how I want to conquer and kill the world and take over and be successful. You know, everyone wants to achieve growth, wealth, all these things. And at the detriment, I was leaving them behind. And that was a real big thing for me is just, what do they need in the moment? Or what does he really need? And you just did it beautifully with your daughter. Like, what does she really need? The focus is not on me. Like, what do they need? And the more I started focusing on their human needs and actually like filling up their bucket, I always saw things get remarkably better.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an interesting thing. I think in the work that I do with some of my clients, they actually struggle with naming their own needs. So that's a lot of work that I do with them is having them identify their needs, but then it is holding space, especially in the context of leadership and parenting, is making room for your kids, your team, whichever dynamic we're working with, you know, let them vocalize what their needs are, because so often we don't know and we don't know where we're operating from. So giving that a voice and giving that space, now we can once that's identified, we can figure out how do we get that need fulfilled. And in relationships, that's a huge issue that we end up dealing with is that we're not aware of our needs and or the other person isn't aware of their needs. And so now we have these unspoken expectations of each other without any real understanding of why we even have those expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good. What I know we've already talked a lot about some of this already, and maybe we've covered it, but I'm wondering, is there like a common thread or like, what is the biggest mistake you see parents kind of making over and over again? And how can we take some practical steps to be more conscious?
I definitely believe that communication is a big, big one for parents. It's just, you know, and it's not saying you have to walk on eggshells and measure everything that you're saying, but really taking the time with paying attention to how we're communicating to our kids. Because when we say things like, what is wrong with you? That is such a shaming statement, because what we're really doing is setting our kids up to internalize, there is something wrong with me. I'm broken. I'm bad. And when we communicate in that way, even though it may not be our intention, that child is now internalizing that shame. And shame is one of those things that we can carry on for years and years until we're ready to actually talk about it and bring it kind of into the light. So paying attention to how we're communicating. And that's why I say it's so important to pay attention to where we're coming from. If we're coming from a place of being highly charged, our nervous system is in that hyper-aroused state or even hypo-aroused, it's about dealing with that first before engaging in the conversation with our kids, because they will pay the price of how we communicate.
Yeah, that is so key. I love that you said that. I've said things like, man, what were you thinking? And I've been said that too. And I know I bring a lot of shame and like, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
Then how does Joel show up in some circumstances as a leader outside of the family? Well, yeah, because deep down in my subconscious, I think like, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. Right. And so, man, some of these simple, we're talking about parenting. We haven't even talked about leadership, but we're just talking about parenting. You can really start to unravel some things for people. And that's why I think this work that you're doing is just so transformational. One of the things I also wanted to mention is you just said something about like your daughter kind of like throwing a fit, a tantrum. Mm-hmm. Something that I've seen in my own life too, is that these tantrums, I get triggered very quickly when someone is throwing a tantrum. And so for that reason, it feels like it's been going on for like 15 minutes. But a lot of times I feel like kids kind of get over it within 90 seconds. And so I always try to remind myself, like, you can just hang in there for about 90 seconds. This will all dissipate. Is that, you see the same thing?
It's so true. Although I think my kids are like really strong tantrum throwers.
I have a couple strong. It depends what tantrum we're talking about. But yeah.
Exactly. No, but it is true. Emotions themselves really do have a lifespan of 90 seconds. The reason why they might last longer, though, is because, and this is true for us as just individuals in general, when we have an emotion or we're having a really big feeling, they really will pass within 90 seconds. The reason why it lasts longer is because we then have a thought about the feeling, which kind of reignites the feeling, and we kind of go back into the circle. The best metaphor I've ever used for this is like a rip current. Like if you've ever been caught in a rip current, you're just trying to get out of it and you just keep spinning and spinning and spinning. Same thing happens, because every time we have a feeling, then we have that thought and then we go back into the cycle of the feeling, and then we keep doing the same thing. When we allow our kids to just throw their tantrum, to your point, they get over it quickly, because it rises and crests and then it passes, because eventually they stop as well. And so in the case of my daughter, for instance, she was having thoughts about her feeling, clearly, because she was already in the like, now my mom is mad at me and she doesn't like me and all these things. And I could hear her saying it. So I knew it was going to last longer than 90 seconds, but I waited it out. I just let her do her thing. And then eventually it dissipated.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. What are some practices just in general that you try to bring to create that culture of mindfulness or just presence or a conscious family?
Yeah. The big one for me is, and I talked to everybody about this, is how important knowing what your values are as an individual. Because when we know what our core values are, what is meaningful to us, when we are in those moments of spin out, or we are having a really hard time grounding ourselves, we can come back to a place of, in this moment, what would be the most meaningful thing, most meaningful action I can take. When we are able to kind of ground ourselves in that, now we're no longer allowing our emotions to run the story, so to speak. We are allowing our value system and what's meaningful to us to run the show. The other part is paying attention to what your body is doing. I one of the things I have trained in is somatic work. And the reason why is because a lot of times we get caught in the cognitive world. We get caught trying to think our way out of things. And sometimes we have to just drop into our body, because our body has so much information. And so from a mindfulness perspective, being able to pay attention to what our body is sensing and noticing when that tension is there, and taking the time to kind of just put our feet on the ground, feel our feet on the ground, pay attention to our breath, really just reground in this moment rather than the moment of 5 minutes ago or whatever happened an hour ago. Just come back to this moment, remind yourself like, I'm safe, I'm okay, everything is fine. Get back into just that connection with self. And then from that place, take the next action.
Yeah, that is so good. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's powerful. If you don't have a North Star, you don't know where you're going, then when the chips are down, like, who will you be? Who will you show up in? And I love that. That's one of your big principles. Talk to me. Let's kind of switch gears here. And I want to just talk into some of the work that you're doing in the leadership space. And, you know, talk to me just about really why that shift. I mean, you've done so much work in other spaces, parenting being one, which is what I wanted to geek out with you a little bit about. But talk to me about that transition and really why you saw this such a need that we need to be bringing in to the world more conscious leaders.
Well, what I was recognizing in my work and doing the conscious parenting and just working with individuals on understanding what those false beliefs are, limiting beliefs that were holding them back, was that it was one thing that came up was, how do we create self-leadership, right? How do I become my own best leader? And through that work, recognizing that it was part of this consciousness, becoming aware of what's holding us back. But then how does that affect us as a whole when we're working with teams? And one of the things that really came up in just working with individuals who, you know, they're professionals. And so they're recognizing that this work is helpful in their personal world. How do they translate it into the professional world? Well, you know, the old way of leading people was always that top-down approach, much like parenting, where it's like, I'm the parent, I'm in charge, do it my way. You know, the because I said so was the kind of the go-to for parents, instead of having a conversation. Well, we were doing that in the business world too. So what we've realized is, in order to not avoid, that's not the right word, but it's to cut down on burnout, right? To cut down on turnover, we have to lean more into this empathetic leadership style. And what that means is becoming a conscious leader. It means recognizing that when we go into the workplace, we're not leading human doings, we're leading human beings. And if we're leading human beings, we have to recognize that they are a whole being, not just the parts that they show up and do for us. And so through that, it's about doing the same thing that we're talking about with conscious parenting, giving space to the experience that our team members are having, not because we're getting all touchy-feely, but because if we can empathize with them and we recognize where they're coming from, we can communicate with them in such a deeper fashion, and they feel understood. And when we're creating a team environment where our team members feel understood, they feel seen, they feel heard, they feel respected, they're going to show up with more motivation to continue to give to that team.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I wanted to ask you, you know, what I see in the leadership space right now is I see a lot of leaders running scared. I see a lot of leaders afraid to lead. They're afraid to stand up to anything or something. And it bothers me. Like, and we're seeing it right now in this whole cancel culture kind of phenomenon, right? If I don't side with this organization or this group, then I must be a racist. And you know what? We're just going to defund and take away all your money. And I'm not even talking about the police. I'm talking about just in general, we're seeing this from, you know, they tried to do it with Spotify and Joe Rogan not too long ago. We saw it with Dave Chappelle and Netflix. And and over and over again, now those are actually two examples of where I think the leaders did the right thing. They said, listen, I don't think he did anything wrong. And if you have a problem with it, then I guess just don't listen to our show. Like, that's it. Mm-hmm. And guess what? After a week of whatever noise, it all went away. What do you say to these leaders that are not standing up for their values, their truth, the reason they really got into this and wanting to lead people? They're not standing up. When they get to a certain height, they just acquiesce to all the lobbyists and all the people. What's your message to them, and how do we turn this around?
I mean, it's the same thing that we were talking about with being a conscious parent, right? If we let fear run the show, we don't actually lead our children. And so really, it's actually bringing to the awareness to these leaders, what are you afraid of? What is the fear? Name the fear, and how does that scare you? When you actually start naming out those fears and how you're scared, now you can say, okay, and then what? And then what are you going to do about that? And really what we drill it down to is we can either name whatever limiting belief is there and work through it that way, or we recognize, you know what? I'll figure it out. Okay, those listeners have left. Well, great. I'm going to go find other listeners who haven't known about my program before, or haven't watched, you know, for Dave Chappelle, haven't watched my program before. You will find a way, because you've done it your whole life. Like, so often we're afraid, but we won't take the time to really work through the fear. We let it, it's there, and we kind of know it's there, and then we let it run the show without really paying attention to what it is and naming what it is. Because when we bring that to the awareness, we now can make a conscious choice. We can now take a committed action. And again, I always go back to, you can go back to your value system. What do I value? What's meaningful to me? And then you move forward from there. And here's the truth too. You are never going to please everybody. There are always going to be people who don't agree with you, don't like you. And that's none of your business. At the end of the day, it's really none of your business what they think of you. Because just because somebody has an opinion of you, if that happens to be a negative one, doesn't make it true. It might make it true for them, but it doesn't make it true for you. I say that routinely to my kids. I say it routinely to the teen clients I work with, because so often we are driven by the opinions of others. We're so worried about the perception of others. And at the end of the day, it's what are you making that mean? How are you internalizing that?
Yeah. There's that famous, I think it's like a yogi or like a Buddhist kind of fable. And I guess the one of the monks gives a woman or a prostitute or somebody a ride across the river on his back because she can't get across. And the other monk is like bothered by it. He's like, how could you give this woman, like, we're not allowed to touch them. Like, and you're right. Doing this. And so he finally brings it up like an hour later on their walk. And he's like, hey, like, I can't believe you allowed this to happen. You touched a woman. And he's like, yeah, I gave that up an hour ago. Like, why are you still holding on to it? And it's just such a great, yeah. He's like, oh, he said, I gave her up an hour ago. Why are you still holding on to her? That's what it was.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, same point. I love what you're saying there. It means a lot. I'm just thinking about, you know, I see a lot of, and I can only relate to an organization that I, you know, worked in San Francisco, and just from the police department, it would see these leaders, higher ups, captains, deputy chiefs, the chiefs. And I'd see them go to these leadership retreats for like a week. And supposedly they're supposed to come back enlightened, but I never saw the change. I never saw any of them change. And so to me, they were just very egotistical and just in it for their own glory and good. And I really think like that hubris is what unfortunately limits them from being amazing leaders and people that will be remembered forever, eternally, and people will talk about. What are you seeing just from some of the work that you're doing, or like, what are some of the results when people really embody this work? Are you seeing it, or is it just like this airy fairy thing that you hear like, oh, conscious leadership, conscious parenting, that sounds great on paper, but is it working?
I will say that I have seen it in my own work where clients will say that it works. And I'm kind of laughing because I just had this experience this last week with a client who's, you know, very large, like very tall. I mean, very tall individual, very, you know, came into coaching with me, didn't like to feel his feelings. And
we're guys, we can't feel feelings. Okay.
He did say, and he may have used an expletive, but he did say like, this stuff is working. He used a different word than stuff.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm actually kind of shocked. And so, yeah, to some people it's like, oh, that's airy fairy. That's again, their opinion. The people who are actually engaging with it and putting it into practice are seeing a difference. They're seeing a difference in how they're showing up in their own life, how they're becoming their own self-leader, how they're leading other people. They're seeing that stuff pay. It works if you're willing to do the work. It's not going to work if you're just like, oh, that's a great idea. So these conferences that they go to and it's like, well, that would be great. It's because they hear it, but they're not actually applying it. You've got to put that effort in to apply what's there. And to your point about, you know, their own ego getting in the way. Yeah, the line between arrogance and humility, super thin. It depends where you're going to walk that line.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Simon Sinek, who I know, wrote this book. His latest book's called The Infinite Game. And he came and spoke to a majority of us in San Francisco a couple of years back. And it was really interesting because everyone was, you know, asking him like, how do we become better leaders and how do we do this and that? And he looked at everybody very quietly for a little bit and he said, guys, it's really simple. He said, how often do you guys in your ivory towers come down and walk down to the bottom floor and go out on the streets and just talk to your workers? Like, do you ever just like have conversations with them and like, Joel, how are you? Like, I noticed you have two kids and you live in San Francisco. Like, tell me about that. Do you ever like just talk to them about anything other than work, or are you always just talking down at them? And he said, if you guys want to be like amazing leaders, go talk to your people. Just get out of your freaking office and talk to them. And I love that. And I think he really nailed something. I didn't see anybody change though. Nobody went and did it. That was the sad thing. Mm-hmm. Same thing for you though. Is that kind of a big one for you that jumps out? I think we're just missing connection more than ever, and presence. Absolutely. And just feeling like we're humans and not a person being bossed around. By the way, this ties back into kids. Like, I don't want to feel like bossed around. Well, here I am working for this major department. I don't want to feel like I'm just another number bossed around. I want to be autonomous. I want to feel like I matter. So yeah, anything, just what I mentioned about Simon and just this infinite game and playing, just connecting again.
Well, what that really leans into is Dan Siegel's work too, that in the power of showing up, he talks about the four S's: being seen, feeling secure, having a sense of safety, and being soothed. That's the same concept. Go have a conversation. Create that sense of safety. Create that sense of, you know, security, that sense of safety with the people that are working on your team. We're in parenting, we've got to do the same thing. Have a conversation with your kids, not about the things, the chores that they need to get done. Again, go do your job. Instead, it's tell me about what's going on in your life. Tell me about what you're experiencing. How is that for you? How is it for you to, you know, my son just started lacrosse practice. So it's not just how was practice. It was tell me about what you guys did. Tell me what you guys, you know, what were some of the drills? What was difficult? What was challenging? What was exciting? Get into a conversation. Have an actual conversation and connection with people, because that's where it all starts.
Yeah, it's so funny. And you and I were talking offline about this. I think we hit the point on the head about the idea of being a conscious leader, being a conscious parent. Like, it's all one big thing, guys. You have to be able, and like the principles that you bring into your marriage or your family or parenting is the same principles you can bring into a culture of leadership for a big organization that you work for, or just your team particular. Like, you can massively change the culture if you started listening to, if you focus on other people's needs, if you empathize with them and created conversations of depth and not just these surface level questions of how was your day? How did you sleep? Like, right. None of that matters, right? That's not connection.
You're going to get the fine. Good.
Yeah, exactly. And I know, like, I've had those conversations with my wife, and it's like, it, you know, I was tired of having those conversations. I had to learn, by the way, this is really key, I think, for people. And I think you would agree. I had to learn a skill. Like, marriage is a skill. Fatherhood is a skill. Yes. I used to think like, oh, you just figure it out as you go. I'm sure people are bringing in this same mentality into leadership as well. It's like, oh, I'll just kind of figure it out. Like, they made me the boss. I must be somewhat good, right? And there's just this mentality of I'll figure it out as I go. Like, no, I had to train. I had to hire coaches. I had to learn because it was a skill that I needed, that I was lacking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a funny thing that you bring up, because I think a lot of people have that idea of like, I don't need a life coach. I know how to do life. The life coach isn't telling you how to do life. It's just helping to look at things in a different way, to see things differently, to open you up to maybe approaching things in a different way in order to do exactly what you're saying. It's a training, it's a learning, it's a not just assuming or taking on cultural, societal, familial ways of doing things. Because if we're ever going to actually change systems that don't work, we have to, again, bring things to the awareness, consciousness, and then take the action we need to shift it.
Yeah, huge. What are some exciting projects that you're working on right now?
Well, I'm continuing to do my one-on-one, which I absolutely love. I love my one-on-one practice. And then I am working on trying to put together shorter, smaller courses that individuals can just kind of download and grab. And at some point, I'm going to write another book. I just haven't figured out exactly what that's going to be.
Yeah. Amongst, you know, having five kids, being a coach, podcast, everything that you do, I'm sure it'll come out in due time.
It'll come out eventually.
I want to kind of wrap things up and maybe ask you some final round questions. But before I do, just anything that I didn't ask you that you wish I had?
No, I think we covered a lot of great things. I think, honestly, the big thing that I would love for people to just take away from this is, you know, doing that work, doing that self-work, while it seems really difficult and hard, and it's not always easy, sometimes it's bumpy, it is so important, because that's how we can actually move ourselves forward. So if you're recognizing that you are somewhat stuck, or you're not moving forward in the way that you want to, it is kind of making that commitment to self in order to move yourself forward for the long haul.
It's so good that you said that. You know, one of the big things for me, and I'm a big advocate of personal development, self-growth. I mean, since I was 18, I just started reading Tony Robbins, and that's really changed the trajectory of my life. But one thing I wasn't doing was again, I mentioned this early on, is devoting energy to my family and working on the marriage skill, the fatherhood skill. I'm like, I have all these other things, life coaching certs and all these other things that have made me a better human. I don't need a parenting coach. And my wife made me an ultimatum a couple of years ago. And I was like, she basically made it. And she's like, you need to hire like this dad coach. Cause like you suck as a parent. And it was hard to hear, but like you said, when I actually said, all right, I'm going to do this, I'm going to stop dodging it. I've invested a lot of other money in business coaches and other coaches. Mm-hmm. I'll take a chance on this dad coach. And when I did that, like you just said, when I invested in myself and like went all in, man, I saw the areas that I was lacking, and and it forced me to stay committed to somebody and show up over and over again so that I could see these insights that I didn't see how they were correlating in my life. And it was one of the best things that I've ever did was making that decision to make some radical change. And I had to take some radical personal responsibility. I didn't want to face.
Yes. Yes. That's such a good point. It is. It's radical acceptance and radical responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I love what you said there. You can only do that with the deep work. It doesn't happen just from reading a book. Love that. I want to ask you some final round questions and then we'll wrap it up and let everybody know where they can find you and connect with you.
Awesome.
So I'm curious, Kamini, what are some choices or maybe even a choice that you made in your life that you think made you who you are today?
I would say that the choice to take the leap and go all in on training on becoming a coach, but then taking that learning even deeper was like absolutely life-changing for me. I think I know that I see myself differently. I show up differently, not just as a parent, but as a human. That is probably the biggest choice that I made and really what it was giving myself permission to do the thing that I really wanted to do and not ask for anyone else's permission. Cause I spent a lot of time making sure everyone else was okay. Just kind of a people pleaser mentality.
I can totally relate.
That's the choice that I had. I made it and I absolutely have zero regrets.
Nice. Love that. I'm a big reader. Are there like a top 1 to 3 books that just, you know, helped you, or you just, man, if anybody was out there and they were trying to improve, these 3 books helped me the most? It doesn't have to be 3, but just a top 1 to 3.
Yeah. The Man's Search, A Man's Search for Meaning, by Viktor Frankl. That's a big one for me. And then this is going to sound funny, but there's, like a children's book called, what's the name of it? It's I'm going to mess it up. Hold on 1 second. It's actually on my phone. Cause I keep it handy. Cause I keep these quotes handy. So give me 1 second to pull it up.
Sure.
The reason why I always stumble is cause I don't put them in the right order. The Bull, the Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse. Oh. It sounds ridiculous that that's a really good book. But the reason why I love this book is if you go and you look at some of the quotes, one of the best quotes in there talks about asking for help. And another quote in there refers to, you know, sometimes I don't know. I get, it's like dealing with overthinking and not knowing what to do. And the horse, I believe, says to the boy, just look at, you know, you're the next step. And the boy says, yes. And so the reason why I love that book is within there are so many nice quotes that kind of reground us into what's actually true. So I would say that that's a good one too.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Those simple things are the ones we got to come back to. And those ones usually make the most sense. It's like, we're looking for these hard answers, you know, and they're not as difficult. It's like, it's very simple, difficult. You know?
Yeah. Yep.
Really cool. Any rituals or just practices that you do on a regular basis? You know, some people have gratitude journaling or cold showers at 4 a.m. in the morning. What do you do, Kamini?
No cold showers at 4 a.m., but I absolutely do get up in the morning before everyone else in my house gets up. That's my hour of peace and serenity. I make sure that there's a workout involved, usually. Not every day, but usually. There's some meditation in there, and then I do have a gratitude practice. However, my gratitude practice is not necessarily done in that little span of an hour. Sometimes it's even done in the shower where you're just going through these are the things I'm grateful for in my life. Cause there's nothing better than to have that gratitude practice when you're shampooing your hair.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. I think Wayne Dyer did the same thing. So yeah, that's good. You're following.
So
that's,
I didn't know that. So now I'm like in good company. So that's great.
Yeah, you're great in great company. And it's, you know, you gotta kind of stack your routine sometimes. So yeah, do it all at once. Man, this was awesome. Last but not least, Kamini Wood, tell people where they can just connect with you either on social media or your website and just learn more about you and everything that you're up to, or if they even want to work with you, what that might look like.
Yeah. On the web, kamaniwood.com, you can learn all about what I'm up to. I also have a blog there. So there's articles on lots of different topics that you can search through and see if there's anything of help and service. And if anybody is interested in working with me, they can easily contact me through my website. And then social media, Facebook, Instagram, same handle. It's Authentic Me.
Awesome. Kamini Wood, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much.